Hey, everybody. Patrick McFarland here of the Liberty Bigley podcast, coming at you with another episode here. Want to talk a little bit about guns. I've been getting into guns a whole lot lately. And if you are listening to this podcast and you're a libertarian, which I assume you would be because you're the Liberty Weekly elite, I'm sure that you like guns or have an affinity for guns, or maybe you're like one of those libertarians that doesn't like marijuana. Just a totally libertarian thing to be into, right? So I'm just kind of learning. I always grew up with guns. My dad and my family, my uncles, they were all into guns. And my dad's half brothers were kind of like grandparents to me, and they were gunsmiths and they were on shooting teams in the military, and they did a whole bunch of reloading and all that kind of stuff. And I never really was able to get into it because I never had the money, or we didn't go shooting as much as I wanted to. But now I have some free time, and mostly I have the funds to be able to do it. But I don't know if it was kind of the panic over the pandemic in quotes or anything else, but I got the Trump bucks and I used it to get some firearms. And one of the firearms that I got was a Chi-Com SKS. And I wanted to talk a bit about it on the show. If you follow me on Instagram or Twitter, you probably seen the SKS on there. And it's a really cool story. And I really am developing this affinity for Milsurp firearms because of the history behind it. And I would rather that they were issued and had seen action. I guess I would take an unissued Milsurp firearm too. However, I was able to get this SKS, and it was from Classic Firearms, which I was really nervous about because I had seen that in some cases it's kind of like the luck of the draw with Classic Firearms. But I got a really nice SKS, and it's all matching serial numbers, which doesn't really matter, I guess, for an SKS, because they were millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions and millions made. However, it just makes you feel nice. So this was from the Jaishe Arsenal, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's probably the most famous arsenal in China. And during the communist Chinese, well, I guess still communist Chinese years, but back in its heyday, it made millions of these SKS firearms. And just a little background on the SKS for those of you who made it this far but aren't into firearms at all. I think there might be some history here for you that you might appreciate, but SKS was the standard, and take this with a grain of salt because I'm learning. But from my understanding, the SKS was the standard issue firearm of the Soviet Army after World War II. And in my understanding, it was the Mosin Nagant that was the standard issue rifle. It's a bolt action rifle, and it's a larger caliber, a larger cartridge. I think it's a larger cartridge. I'm not sure about the caliber. I would think so. It might be the same, but it was a bolt action rifle that was produced, I think, far before World War II and was still in service at that time. And they made millions and millions and millions and millions of those. However, the SKS was the standard issue after World War II, is my understanding. And it is a mid-size cartridge, kind of in the more modern times, armies have gone with an intermediate cartridge size. It used to be a larger, like a 30-06, like a hunting load, back in the early 1900s. And in the 1800s, in the mid 1800s, it was kind of a larger load. But then they did a bunch of research and they found out that most infantry units don't even engage the enemy unless they're within like 300 yards. So you can carry more ammunition with a mid-size cartridge. And they also found out that you actually incapacitate the enemy more if you hit him and wound him, because then you take him out and you take out the two buddies that come to help him and provide assistance. So pretty interesting development. But the Soviet Army created the SKS, and I don't know if it was manufactured by the same man, the same designer who had eventually created the Kalashnikov, the AK. Not sure if it was the same designer. However, they're very similarly shaped or designed, and it's a pretty iconic, like, Soviet look, and that's what I enjoy about the firearm a lot. But the SKS is a very, very, very simple but effective design. And it seems that, you know, Soviet weapons are very practical and simple, whereas American weapons, just in general, they seem to be a well balance of utility versus intricate design. And whereas like German weapons or something else would be very practical, but a very sophisticated design. Whereas French or Japanese weapons would be very sophisticated design, but not practical, or a sophisticated design that doesn't work very well and is also impractical. But the SKS, it shoots the same cartridge as the AK-47. And my understanding, the AK-47, I don't know if 47 corresponds to the year that it was developed, but it became the most popular assault weapon in the world, whatever assault weapon means. But in this case, I'm classifying it as a fully automatic rifle size, like with a barrel longer than, I'd say, 12 or 14 inches, that can be fully automatic, that shoots the mid-size cartridge like that, and is kind of in a rifle setup. And the first one you could say would be the, I think it's the Sturmgewehr 44. It's the, man, I should bring this up in front of me if you don't want keys clacking. I think the STG 44, let's see. Yeah, the STG 44. That was the first selective fire assault rifle. And that's another important part of what makes an assault rifle or an assault weapon because you have select fire. You can fire semi-automatic, you can fire bursts, although I think the STG 44 was only semi-automatic and automatic fire. But it shoots that mid-length cartridge, and as opposed to like a submachine gun, like a Thompson, which shoots a pistol. I believe the Thompson shoots 45 auto, but that has, I don't know if that's a select fire or not, but it has, let's look at it. It has automatic fire, Thompson submachine gun. Yeah. Let's see, cartridge 45 ACP, barrel length 10 inches. Don't know if it has select fire on it. However, I got off on a tangent away from the SKS. But basically, the SKS became the ceremonial rifle of the Soviet bloc countries, much like the M1 Grand is the ceremonial rifle of the United States military, like the Color Guard, not the Color Guard, the Honor Guard will use the M1 Grand in their displays, and in the Soviet bloc countries, it's the SKS. But the SKS, at least for Russia, it was a short service weapon. It had a short service history, much like the M14 did for the United States Army. And then it was replaced with the AK-47 and then the AKM, which is basically what a lot of people would identify it as being, the AK-47. But it was the other Soviet bloc countries like China and maybe some of the eventual satellite states, the nations in the Soviet orbit, that kind of stuck with the SKS. And the Russians were actually helping a lot of these bloc countries, specifically China, doing kind of like a lend-lease program or a military aid program. And from my research, I've been able to tell that this Jaishe arsenal was created with funds and military consultants from the Soviet Union. So they created millions of these. They started creating it at the Jaishe arsenal in the 1950s. And from what I can tell from the serial number and the what my SKS has on it in terms of features, I believe that my SKS was made somewhere between 1966 and 1968. And if you know what else was happening in the world at that time, it's very possible that these SKSs specifically saw combat in action in Vietnam. Possibly. And I was going to read the description from Classic Firearms. Original Chi-Com Vietnam era military surplus Type 56 Chinese SKS rifles manufactured at the famous Jianshe Arsenal number 26. It's 7.62 by 39 semi-automatic. These rifles include a 10-round box magazine and spike-type folding bayonet. So a lot of the, in my research, the SKS is usually, and they say if it's a military SKS, it was made with the actual bladed bayonet. Most of the military models had a bladed bayonet. However, there were certain years that this Jaishe arsenal created rifles that had a spiker bayonet on it. And if you type it in, I'm not going to put it in the show notes page, but if you type in Chinese SKS spiker bayonet, you'll see what I'm talking about. But it's a folding type bayonet. So these are all well used, and you could buy these. And what Classic Firearms does is they buy these SKSs in crates, because in the 1990s, the Clinton administration made it illegal to import firearms from China and Russia, is my understanding. But there's a cool off period of 20 years where if there are Chinese or Russian firearms, they have to sit in a neutral third country for 20 years before they can be imported into the United States. So in the 90s, before this ban went into effect, there are so many millions of SKSs, you could buy one for like $100. No kidding. And in Canada, it's my understanding there's no import ban like this. So you can still buy Chinese and Russian SKSs for like $150 or $200. But Classic Firearms, and I understood that it's luck of the draw, and from reviews that I've read, Classic Firearms can be really hit or miss, but they have unboxing videos on their YouTube channel. Type in Classic Firearms SKS unboxing and you'll find the video. But these are so interesting because they are military turn-in condition firearms. Some of them have trench art on the side, where on the stock, where the soldiers that carried them have carved things into the stock. And I didn't get one that had trench art in it, but it has battle scars, it seems like. So they're really beat to hell. Someone carried it. And I got some rust on mine. However, it's not unfireable. There's some rust on the receiver and like little patches of rust and pitting on the dust plate, but it's a shooter. I put 150 rounds through it, but when you get them, they're packed in cosmoline, which is this goo that they dip the firearms in before they put them into long-term storage, where they will, it protects it from rust. And so pretty cool. I had to take the entire thing apart, and over the weekend I cleaned it all up and I got all the cosmoline out of it. And it was really a lot of fun, and I was really looking forward to it because, you know, it's a project, but it's also something that you do and you put together and you have it for the rest of your life. And, you know, sharing it with my son or, you know, any other kids that I have, it's just a really cool thing, you know. And I'll read the rest of it, the description from Classic Firearms. So, original Vietnam-era Chinese SKS rifles with spike bayonet. These historic and highly popular Chi-Com rifles were banned from importation by the Clinton administration in the early 90s. This small group of rifles was stored in a neutral country for over 20 years before being granted an exception for import and is now here at Classic Firearms for sale to you, while they're currently out of stock. So I think they sold everything that was in that shipment. But let's see here. Rifles have been stored in heavy cosmoline and as such are well preserved, but will be in turn-in condition. Rifles are complete and functional, but expect varying degrees of bluing wear, some heavy, some less. And stocks with dents, dings, scratches, dings, they included dings twice, gouges, and discoloration from service use, handling, and storage. Further concerning the stocks, most stocks are solid, but some may have small cracks, or in some cases, even a little trench art. We have not found any that are broken or unsafe to use, as these have all been sorted out by the importer. You can expect a good solid shooter, but in most cases not a pretty stock. However, we have done a thorough inspection on these, and there are a lot of exceptions to that rule, as many are quite nice, so the cosmetic condition is pretty much all over the place. I even found some that looked damn close to being unissued with really nice stocks and 100% bluing, but those were the exception, not the rule. So he goes on to talk more about the inventory, but some stocks may have trench art field carvings in the stocks as represented in one of the images above. We are not disqualifying these carvings from hand selects, as some they hand select. If you pay a little extra, they'll pick the best condition out of 10 that they look at. But some collectors prize trench art. I wonder why. It's so damn cool. And many consider this field art extremely desirable. We also do not exclude a slight repairable crack. Anyways, so now for the good stuff. Here's the history. These are all very early rifles, i.e. pre-Vietnam to early Vietnam era rifles, which probably saw use in that conflict. Now, I don't know if that is a marketing ploy. I haven't been able to research the serial numbers to see exactly which ones from the Giant Shea arsenal actually were sent over to Vietnam. But it's a cool possibility to think about. These definitely were carried by someone. I mean, I think mine was definitely carried by someone. But so as early original military rifles, they contain mil-spec parts based on the manufacturing protocol in use by that particular military contract factory during the time period that they were produced. All of these rifles have a barrel lug, which can be seen between the rear sight and the receiver, indicating that they are threaded in rather than pinned in barrels. In addition, many of the trigger groups are milled, but some are stamped, and the type of trigger group received will be luck of the draw. Of the vast majority of these rifles, all of the visible serial numbers on the primary metal parts of the rifle are matching. Therefore, if you order any rifle, you run a very high chance of getting one with all matching serial numbers like I did, which was really cool. However, you know, it doesn't really up the value of it because it's an SKS. There were millions and millions made. So, so I was just looking to see if they had any more history on these, but yeah, anyways, I mean, we learned a long time ago that even though we tell folks that any rifle is a well-used surplus former military rifle that has been drugged through the mud and the blood, they still somehow expect to get a brand new Belgian Browning. As such, we would instead portray the worst case and have you be pleasantly surprised upon receipt, then vice versa. So, yeah, I mean, it's really cool. And when I saw that these came out, I knew they were only going to be available for a limited time. So I had to jump on it. And I don't know exactly how often things like this come about, as I'm still pretty new to the firearms community, being an active kind of having it be my active hobby. So, but I thought I'd share it with you guys and talk a little bit about, you know, my relationship with this rifle and my experience fixing it up and shooting it. It's really something special. But now for like just maybe 5 or 10 more minutes here, I am so concerned with the state of everyone's kind of talking about how, oh, there's so many people, former anti-gun people or liberals or whoever are actually buying firearms now and joining the firearms community. And I saw something today that even though African Americans are only 13% of the population, they've accounted for 58% of new gun sales in the last 6 to 9 months. And ammo, as you probably know, guns are hard to find. guns aren't as hard to find as ammo is hard to find, because if you're looking around right now, you can find, like, there was a shortage where you couldn't find AR-15s for a while, and there was a period of time where you couldn't find AKs for a while, and I was able to find an AK a couple weeks ago for sale at my local store, but a lot of the online retailers don't have AKs, and some have just started to get some AKs in stock. Like, let's see, Classic Firearms has some Yugoslavian James River Armory AKs in stock, but they're for like $1,000. And usually, I don't know about the James Rivers. I think those are some of the higher end AKs that you can get, but like a Wasser. Let's see. Wasser should be like $800 and something from my experience, like a Century Arms Wasser. But now AKs, you know, you're going to, if you want to get an AK, it's going to be like $1,000. And they used to be about $700 in my understanding. And I guess I'm getting into guns at the worst time. Let's see, Century Arms Romanian Wasser. Well, they're still out of stock, so you can't get one. Yep, all out of stock. But the other thing that's out of stock is ammunition. And a lot of the gun stores won't even sell you boxes of ammunition unless you buy a gun to go with it. And like specifically 9mm, 45, and 5.56, and I think probably 223, you can't get unless you buy a gun. But the other thing that's completely sold out is reloading equipment is completely sold out. And that's the most interesting and kind of, I don't know, concerning, because I like, it makes sense, but you can't find primers anywhere. I mean, you cannot find primers anywhere unless you go on like auction sites like Arms List, or you could go on Gunbroker or something like that and find some primers. And for those of you who don't know and aren't into guns, who have somehow made it this far in the episode, primer is the boom button. It's the thing that the firing pin punches, and it creates a small explosion, which ignites the main powder charge and then propels the bullet out of the cartridge, the casing, and through the barrel. But yeah, you can't find any primers, but I'm trying to get into reloading. That was always, my dad has a bunch of equipment and I just ordered tonight, which is why I'm on this kick right now and making this episode. I just ordered a bunch of components, but I'm going to try and get some primers. That's the only thing that I don't have so far, but it's hard. It's not too hard to find like reloading dies for your press. Those are specific to the cartridge that you're going to make. But yeah, anyways, so I'm going to close it up there. I hope you enjoyed my love story to my Chiacom SKS, and I wanted to thank everyone for listening to Liberty Bigly and checking this out. If you have checked out because of, I directed you there from the Liberty Weekly podcast. But if you enjoy this, why don't you, could you please share the Liberty Bigly podcast, get more people listening to this. It's fun to do, a lot more off the cuff and informal, but it's very easy to put out episodes. And I enjoy it a lot. So thanks everybody. Thanks for listening to this. Be sure to share, like, subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. And we will catch you next time. Peace.